I think somebody's playing around with the intro. Thanks for bringing me in and bringing me out. Welcome, everybody. And for those people tuning in, yes, that is our old intro, and hopefully you enjoyed it.
if anyone had any guess,
one day.
Steve's on production tonight.
Yeah, I am on production, and the team informed me, but this is an episode without our sponsor, so they love to support me through when probably... I'm not at my best anyway. So, yeah, lovely intro. And maybe next week we'll have a new sponsor. There is one in the offing, and we're excited for it. We'll have a new logo and everything else to go with it. So, Dan, get ready for it. Yeah, episode 203, 204, 205, 207.
Jinx it, Steve. Every time we announce the episode number, we always have to rearrange it.
We're not doing that anymore.
Another episode.
No, welcome to another episode of the Edgy Futurist podcast. It's been a good week, but a tiring week for me. I think for those people who tuned in last week, was it just me and you, Ben, last week? I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, Dan. I think Dan was skiving somewhere doing something.
I was here.
Yeah, you were doing fire extinguisher training, weren't you? Something like that.
Yeah, you were.
Yeah, you were doing fire extinguisher training.
I can't remember who was on. But I know I was here.
No, it was Yakov. Yeah, you were here. Yeah, you were. It was a week before he was on fire extinguisher training. Ladder training.
Yeah. So, well, for everybody, yeah, last week was a bit of a terrible week. My car broke down. It's cost me an absolute fortune. I was stood at the side of the road for 2 hours in the snow, and I've still not recovered. I've got this cold that just, if anybody's had it over Christmas, apparently it's one of these things that just won't go away. So, yeah, I'm glad to be working from home, actually. Because I wouldn't want to wish this on anybody else in an office, but it's been a good week.
Why don't you roll over and we'll rub your belly, like metaphorically, obviously, because we're away.
I was going to say this is a bit inappropriate for a start of podcast, but yeah, if anybody's not listening to this,
do you want me to pull out and leave you two alone?
So. I don't know what you're going to pull out of what.
Come on,
ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous, Daniel. Bring that to this level. Dan, how's your week been?
It's been good, yeah. We had the top brass of the Edge Foundation in college today.
Just for everybody who's only listening, you need to know that Dan's now back in his Christmas jumper as usual. But
it's not Christmassy.
It's lovely at Christmassy, but he came on in a.
He'd come in wearing a suit, and we said, "Oh," and he went, "I'm always wearing a suit."
Such a fibber.
Somebody else were coming in. do you know what? Next time when they say, if your boss says wear a suit, Dan, apparently Mr. Blobby's original suit is up for sale on eBay.
It's
65 grand. It's gone for. Don't specify which kind of suit. Just wear Mr. Blobby's suit.
65 grand.
Yeah. It is, check on eBay, it's gone for £65,000, the original Mr. Blobby. Lovely. And there's bits missing and everything. So God knows what's happened to Mr. Blobby. But yeah, I'm glad to see that you are in your suit for the higher echelons of... and what is the Edge Foundation?
Oh, don't ask me that.
Ben, how's your week been, mate? How's it going?
Yeah, mine's been wicked. Mine's been wicked. I've been playing around with a few little new tools, I've found out about Notion. I've been looking at Notion for a while, but it's helping me to organise my life. For those of you who know, I've stopped.
You know, I tried it. I tried it again. I'd give it a second go for about a week.
Yeah, but you didn't really try it, though. I'm sure
I did. It
was 2 days ago. You said you were going to try it.
I was using it. I created a few pages, and I was starting to customise it a bit. And then I just suddenly thought, I can do this in a Google Sheet.
Yeah, well,
so I'm glad you clarified this. I thought you were talking about World in Notion, but it's World in Motion. Yeah. I thought Dan was talking about the John Barnes rap, and he tried it once, couldn't spit the bars, and moved on to a Google Sheet. But
Steve, are you all right?
I've had zero caffeine.
I've had a bit of Robinson's apple and blackcurrant.
Just a bit. I've been playing around with Notion. I've been enjoying that. I've been supporting a few colleges this week, which has been nice. So yeah, and I'm looking forward to tonight's guest. It's probably a good time to bring in our guest there, Steve.
Is indeed. So yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure. Somebody I've recently met and been in conversations with. We've got David, the founder of Entelechy Academy. So David, do you want to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about the organisation and what you do?
What I do, let's start off with that. Well, I'm the founder, so I do everything from sticking the stamps on the envelopes to going to the post office, hiring people, raising money, building a team, and all those good things. And actually, you were all talking about your week. So if I go back a week from last Thursday to this evening, on Friday last week, we had a whole team retrospective, which we do every 2 weeks about what we did in the previous 2 weeks, what had worked, what hadn't worked, how we could improve things. On Saturday, we made a new hire who's been with us today and yesterday on our team offsite. And I've always really carefully handpicked all new team members. And I did ask the team today when he left, so what are all of your thoughts and feelings? And it's like, wow, he's a firecracker. He's amazing. I loved him. He was great. So that was really good. On Sunday, I had a bit of a epic day. One of our existing investors who is on our board as a non-executive director came with his wife for lunch, and Amy, our COO, and I met them in a local pub, and we took the dog for a walk. We had a lovely pub lunch. And at the end of the lunch, as we were all saying goodbye to each other, he said, oh, by the way, Kenny and I have had a chat on the way here, and we'd like to put in another £1 million into your company.
That sounds like a win.
Yeah, I think so. Well, we've established, David, that you've won the competition for the best week so far.
I haven't finished yet. That day got better. Because
did you win the lottery?
Well, here the end of the story. So that left £2.5 million of the funds that we thought we wanted to raise later on this year, much later on this year. And a few weeks ago, I was introduced to an amazing guy in South Africa who's a real entrepreneur, building a whole ecosystem that is environmentally sustainable. He wants to build everything from a data center powered by solar. A hemp farm's going to create 12,500 jobs. And I was approached because he had heard about us and wanted to develop each of the 48 companies in his ecosystem into companies of character. And we had an amazing meeting. And at the end of the conversation, he just threw in and said, are you guys, how are you doing with funding? And I said, oh, well, actually, we've got a fundraising going on at the moment, so I'd like to see the details. Anyway, the following weekend, we had a 3.5-hour meeting to talk all about how we could help build these 48 companies of character. And he asked for a call on Sunday evening at 5 o'clock, where I was already celebrating the £1 million win. And he'd read all of the investment documentation. He said, I'm sorry, there's my dog barking at someone right at the front door. And then he basically said, you know, the £2.5 million you want to raise later on this year, we want to underwrite the whole thing for you now. Yes. So I raised £4.5 million in a day. And so you can imagine that our team offsite yesterday and today were pretty amazing. New start, funding finished. We've launched the product a few weeks ago and it's already got amazing traction. So the week couldn't have been a better week, to be honest. Amazing week. So
sounds good, but can you lend me a tenner? No, just joking. No, that is pretty epic. That's pretty epic. So obviously that sounds like one of those. Just so you know, we're 200 and odd episodes deep. And we do that intro pretty much every week where we talk about what's happened this week. And you're the first guest who's actually joined in and talked about how good their week's been. So thank you for joining us in on that. And we love that. I love the story that's come from that. I wonder if it'd be good to talk about why we're going to get into the academy and talk about why you created that or what it is. But I wonder if you can just tell us a little bit about you and why you came into that.
But the two stories are joined together. I'm sure you're all familiar with the concept of Ikigai, which is the intersection of four spheres in a sort of Venn diagram, one of which is I want to find something I'm absolutely brilliant at. The next is I want to find something I'm absolutely passionate about. And the third is I want to find something that pays the bills. And the fourth one is I want to find something that really makes a difference in the world. And when I wrote my book about 10 years ago, I talked about how being in the flow means achieving all of those four things. And right from the beginning of my career, a long time ago, I have been absolutely fascinated in, let's call it performance X factor. How come those two companies started in the same town in the same year with the same idea and access to the same resources, and one company 10 years later is 127 times bigger than the other one? What did they do or have that was different to the other one? And I've been at work 45 years now, so I'm not going to tell you my entire life story because that might use up the entire hour. But my passion has always been throughout my career helping anybody who is in my orbit become their entelechy. And it might be a good idea now to unpack that word entelechy. So Aristotle coined the word. And the entelechy of anything is the very best version of that thing or that person with all of its potential fully actualized. And so the entelechy of an acorn is an oak tree, the entelechy of a caterpillar is a butterfly, and the entelechy of you, Ben, is the very best version of you with all of your potential fully actualized. And it's always throughout my entire life, whether it was as a single parent bringing up my two children from when they were 7 and 3, how could I help them find their ikigai to become their entelechy, help them individually to become the best version of themselves, accepting that they're as completely different to each other as chalk and cheese and neither of them like me. I've always done it with every team member I've ever hired. I've always done it with every board I've been a member of. Every company I've helped with their strategy, how can we help you become your entelechy, the best version of yourself with all of your potential fully actualized? And like lots of people, I had a number of jobs, all of which I think I was passionate about. I think I was brilliant at a few of them, and they paid the bills, made a difference. But I always wanted to find something, a way to democratize what I have spent a big chunk of my career doing for a small number of expensive fee-paying CEO clients, and find a way to help anybody anywhere at any age, life stage, income level, get access to that wisdom and help them achieve their entelechy. And Aristotle went further to say a simple little phrase that character determines destiny. So we all end up in life wherever we end up as a direct function of our character. And whereas lots of people would say that you're born with your character and there's nothing you can do about it, that's just rubbish. And we help people learn to develop 54 character qualities. And if we take any one of them, which is being strategic or being kind or being open-minded, when you actually say to someone, do you really believe that it's impossible for you to learn to become more kind or more open-minded? No, of course I can. You know, and so essentially we've created a learning journey that enables people to be more of each of those 54 character qualities. And those 54 character qualities underpin all skills, hard skills, technical skills, soft skills. And so if you are able to understand how each or any one of those 54 character qualities could help you improve your life in some way, then we've created a heutagogy which helps people achieve that. And so what I now do is I have decided that this is my legacy project after my 45-year career, and I bought all of my experience and all of everything I've ever done in my career and put it into this beautiful young company to help the world develop its entelechy.
I love it.
Yeah, I'm sitting here just saying, it just makes sense. But I think it's listening to somebody who understands it and puts it in the right way to make it make sense. Because, you know, if we talk about education, the future of education for many different things, and I don't think there's any body in education that doesn't really want to believe that what we're trying to do is support our young people to be the best that they can be. But ultimately, I think you've said it, and I think we've all said it, that actually what we're creating is actually not that. It's trying to create the best of what we think is right, which is such a different thing, isn't it?
In 1997, I founded a tiny little company called Merrick & Co. Merrick's my middle name. It's the M in the David C.M. Carter. And Merrick & Co. is still going. I exited the company about 10 years ago. But it eventually became the world's leading chief executive mentoring company. We had mentors all around the world and clients all around the world. And, you know, one of my clients, a silly example, was a chap called Chris Griffith, who at the time was the CEO of Anglo Platinum, which is the world's biggest platinum mining company, 98,000 employees, 54% of the world's resources in platinum. There was nothing I could teach him or his board about mining platinum better, but that wasn't what he wanted me to help him with. He wanted me to help his team and his organization become a peak performing organization. We did all of that through the development of the character of the company and the individuals. And so I know after 25 years of experience, it has dramatic positive impacts on boards and C-suites and CEOs. But I wanted to make it available to all 98,000 employees of Anglo Platinum, not just the board and the C-suite. And to something that Ben was just saying, and you kind of followed up on, Steve, I didn't realize, and I never thought about it, but in many ways, for those 25 years, I was in education. It was education of CEOs in a non-academic sense. But like all software projects or tech projects or any project, I've always started every conversation with a new client with one simple question, which is, what's the problem we're trying to solve? And when I start reading things like Britain has slid from number one in the world of productivity league tables to number 30 over the last 40 years, and the cost that has to our economy, when I read things like 750,000 graduates who graduated in the last 2 years are on minimum wage and don't have a graduate salary job, when I read all of the pushback from the CBI, who represent employers in the country, saying, you're not sending us work-ready people. They may have technical skills, but they have no soft skills or work-ready skills. We spent a year and a quarter going to talk to everybody who'd written research studies on this so-called soft skills crisis. I always tell people that research project was a combination of the most frustrating thing I've ever done and the most hilarious, because we asked hundreds of HR directors, employment federations like the CBI, UCAS, McKinsey and PwC and Pearson, all of whom had written about it. Exactly what soft skills do your employees or applicants not have that you want and need them to have? And the original list was 802 skills. Now, there was a lot of duplication in that, but it also included 356 soft skills that included things like Excel spreadsheet modeling and PowerPoint presentation making. And one of my funniest, most frustrating stories was having to explain to the group head of HR for a major multinational retailer that Python programming wasn't actually a soft skill. And so we ended up reducing this down to 77 essential soft skills that employers said were lacking in their applicants and workforce that they needed. And we put it in a framework. And as we all know, everybody loves a framework. But when we showed it to them, said, if we build something that helps people learn to develop these 77 essential skills, will you buy it from us, partner with it? And they all said, oh, yes, 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 lovely, fantastic. We said, well, you do realize, don't you, that half of what people need to develop these skills is missing. There's another half of this framework that you've never talked about, never asked about, the absence of which means that any soft skill training you ever do won't work. And that, I want to go back to your comment about education. Education, of course, comes from the Latin verb educare, which means to teach. And there's a big difference between assessing what people were taught versus assessing what they have learned and applied. And I think one of the big flaws and the problems of the education system is we tip out hundreds of thousands of young people every year who have been assessed on what they were taught, but they've actually learned nothing that they can apply in a real world setting in terms of work-ready skills. And so half of what they need to be effective in the workplace has never been taught to them. I know this is a podcast and you can all see me, but your listeners won't be able to. But, you know, we've developed this pack of cards, which has got the 54 character qualities on it. I shuffle the cards. I hand them to a head of L&D or a head of HR and say, put them into two piles. If our people were better at this, I could tell you exactly what the benefit to our organization would be and how that would help develop productivity and profitability. Or it's not relevant in our company or in our industry or our sector. And they, all right, fine. And they get 40 cards into the 54 and say, well, we want all of our people to be better at all of these things. And if they were, we could tell you exactly how that would help them and us and improve our. And then my next question is, what do you do to teach these people these skills today? And they're like, well, we don't. And then the other card trick is we hand the cards to a young person in their workforce or at college or university and say, put them into two piles. If I was better at this, my life would be better and I could tell you exactly what the benefit would be and how it would help me. And then they go shuffle the cards and put them into two piles and 40 cards into the 54. They look at you and say, David, why weren't we taught this at school? Why weren't we taught this at college or at university? Of course, I need to learn to be accountable, responsible, disciplined, organized, efficient, reliable, empathetic, creative, collaborative, honest, kind, compassionate, because they are the human life skills that you're going to need in a marriage, as a parent, as a community member, as a boss, as an entrepreneur, as an employee, as a team member. And they've never been taught. And they're like, why weren't we taught this at school? It's like, well, don't worry, you're going to learn them now with us. And so this is, I hope I've answered your question, what do we do? And I hope I've answered your question, what brought me to this point where I have decided to devote the rest of my life to helping the world develop their character.
I'm listening to this and I'm it's resonating very, very deeply from a religious studies sociology teacher background. Obviously, seeing that I saw the religious studies curriculum shift away from being this kind, I believe, this kind of helping people understand rights and wrongs and community, how you relate to other people, all that element of soft skills, to becoming more of a knowledge-based curriculum where you need to learn this about these people who believe this thing and pray this way and have this kind of stuff. And it changed in a way that even in my time, short time in education, just felt like it had gone significantly backwards. We've had a number of guests on the podcast over the years who have talked about these soft skills or power skills, as we like to bring them out, and this idea of the development of character, and it ties to those wonderful quotes that we often talk about, this that we hope for a day where people are judged by the content of the character, not the color of the skin, and all the stuff that lands with that from Martin Luther King and others, to in terms of big people who have said it's about more than just what you can do. It's more than what your qualifications say. It's about the person that you are and how we develop that as a person. And I think we have been banging on, I think is the phrase that I would use, feel like we've been banging the drum from an Edgy Futurist perspective, that education has got to be about more than, I love that what you just said, more than assessing what they were taught, but about what they've learned and applied. And that isn't just about subject stuff. It's about how you become a better person. Does that mean you relate to your friends and to your teachers and to the old lady that needs to help cross the road? Like, that kind of stuff is fundamental, isn't it? And it is quite sad, really, that we've neglected that for as long as we have in education. And so companies like yours, and organizations like yours are having to fix that in the business world. It just feels a little bit wrong.
Can I tell you a little story from my own school days, which I think you'll like and relate to? My form teacher in year 1, 2, and 3 in my secondary school was also a Mr. Carter, no relative. And he was my RE teacher. And I loved RE because I'm highly dyslexic, but I'm not stupid. And I loved learning about Islam and Hinduism and Buddhism and all the aspects of all those different religions. And of course, you know, pretty much worked out they were all basically the same. And you weren't allowed to kill on any of them or steal or be adulterous. They all seemed to have the same 10 commandments. But just voiced in different ways. Anyway, and I'll come back to this because I'm going to talk in a second about how all of the things that my age group, benefited from, that have all been eviscerated out of state education so harmfully. But so I love debating, and I joined the debating society at school, and every year there was a prize, and I did very well at debating. And in the third year, you know, I went into the Surrey competition and then the Southern Counties competition. Anyway, the two boys in my year that got through to the final was myself and another chap. And he is a Muslim, and I'm kind of pretty non-denominational, but I've always really enjoyed learning and studying Buddhism. And so for months and months and months, we knew that we were going to go head to head about, you know, the pros and cons of Buddhism versus Islam. And I did all my facts and all my research. And of course, I had to research the other religion because to make sure I understood what he was going to argue. And the day came and we were both marched onto the school stage in front of 600 boys for the final. And as we went onto the stage, he turned around to Mohammed and to me and said, "Oh, boys, I hope you don't mind, but I've decided to twist this up a little bit this year and develop your critical thinking skills." And we're like, "What does that mean?" So he said, "Well, David, you're going to argue in favor of Islam, and Mohammed, you're going to argue in favor of Buddhism." It's like, "What?" With 1 minute's notice. And on we go, both trying to win the school prize. And honestly, I think we both knocked it out of the park. And so, but his reason was, "I want to develop your critical thinking skills." And we live in a world today where anybody who doesn't agree with the narrative is shut down, censored, deplatformed. You know, it's like, why can't I watch anything on the mainstream media where there's a scientist who says, well, here's the evidence for climate change, and here's someone who says, that's not what it what my research says. I want to listen to them both. I want to listen to the pro-vaxxers and the anti-vaxxers. I want to develop my critical thinking skills. And because I was taught that so young, and I was taught sport and music and drama and things that help you develop, work in a team and lead a team or captain a team, all of those things have been eviscerated, I think, out of the state education system very harmfully, and have never been replaced. And, you know, Duke of Edinburgh, Cadet Corps, and all those other good things, all of that is a thing of the past. And I think that education has also sadly become very woke. And there is one message and one narrative that particularly at universities these days, which I find horrendous, is like, where is the debate? Where's the discussion? Where's the critical thinking? And that's just one example. Now, I think that form teacher was a genius. And I think he read the two people in the competition brilliantly, because Mohammed was definitely up for it as well. And so was I. And we actually really enjoyed the challenge. So I think all of the things that my generation could benefit in a state school, so many of them have been eviscerated because of cost cuts, very sadly. And I also think that what we're taught and how we're taught hasn't changed for 100 years. I mean, my daughter, who's now 36 years old, and my son, who's 32 years old, who I brought up on my own, they both had more jobs since they left school or college than I've had in my lifetime. You know, the whole job for life thing that my generation is just a joke. I mean, my children's children will have jobs in 20 years' time that haven't even been invented today. You know, no one even knows about or thinks about today. So we're going to need to learn to develop young people to be agile, and in a way that previous generations, we're going to need to value things like agility and flexibility and open-mindedness, because that's what they're going to need to survive and thrive. And so we need to teach them those things, and they need to learn how to develop critical thinking skills and curiosity and open-mindedness and confidence and agility, because that's what they're going to need to survive and thrive. And I just feel that the way in which they're taught and what they're taught and what they end up leaving education with is less than half, if that, of what they're going to need even in their first year at work. And the number, I can't remember all these statistics, but it's over 50%. I don't remember exactly. But 50% of young people, when surveyed at the end of their first year at work, say, I'm still not work ready, and I absolutely wasn't when I arrived here. And a lot of what I need here, I could have been taught at school or at college. I mean, let's face it, if you've got 3 years to do a degree and you've got to do research and a dissertation, you can learn to be analytical and you can learn to be organized and disciplined and focused and so many of those character qualities during the course of your studies. It's not an extra thing you do. It's how you do your studies. And all we're doing is rote learning testing of what you were taught. It's scandalous. It's absolutely scandalous. And so we not only need to add a whole bunch of new things to the curriculum, which are done in the flow of studies, not as some additional theoretical subject. And we need to do it urgently so that when people leave with their degree in aeronautical engineering or applied science, whatever it is, they are accountable, responsible, disciplined, organized, efficient, reliable, open-minded, focused, and all the other things that they're going to need when they get to work. And we've given them half the stuff they need and not the other half.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. I think I was on a call with lots of digital industries about a year ago now, and someone, one of the, I think it might have been from Ubisoft, said that actually when our digital students go into their workplace and get a job, their skills have a life scale of about a year and a half now. So
I've 18 months.
Yeah. So that's if the course is up to date as well, and teaching what's actually going on. But the tools and how things work move on so fast that they're going to need to reskill within a year and a half of leaving college. And I think you're right. And I know we do talk about this quite a bit on this podcast. So I think we're singing from the same hymn sheet here, in that it's about giving our young people the skills to be able to find their way, really. And I know we had a guy called Manish, who's a health futurist, on a few weeks ago, and he was talking about Reid Hoffman's book, The Startup of You, and how actually we need to be teaching our young people how to take on those characteristics of almost like of a startup company and apply that to their own lives and have those skills that to be able to be agile and to adapt and to work, unlearn, relearn. And it's something I'm still learning today. I'm 36 and I feel like I'm almost just breaking out of or getting over what I learned in education, really. I think we were talking before we went on air, and I said something about how because obviously my job's in technology, and how technology might be moving to a stage now, especially in the last couple of months with new tech coming out, new artificial intelligence technology coming out, where I think we can't persuade the system. I think we've tried to persuade the system for decades now, and I think we're at a point now where technology is such an advancement where the system's going to be forced into changing. Otherwise, we're going to be. I was just talking to somebody before, and we're literally at a point now where AI is creating work. AI is completing the work.
I don't agree with you. Okay. I have watched these two immovable forces, education and business, get very frustrated with each other for 20 years. And I think the universities and colleges have got such a vested interest in the status quo continuing. There's with the millennial demographic boom, overseas students, you know, good universities can fill their coffers every single year by not changing a thing. And employers aren't going to tell the government or can't find a way to tell the government to change it. I think it's private enterprise that's going to have to come in and say, look, there's a gap between what you need and what's provided, and we can provide that gap. And actually, sadly, and I say this, I mean it sadly, is a revolution is required, and revolutions take time to gather momentum, and you've got to find the early adopters and the people who wake up at college, at university, and think, you know what, I don't want to leave here with 30 grand's worth of student debt and not get a graduate level salary. And when they're shown the evidence, which of course they were never shown when they went through UCAS and signed up in the first place, they were never told when they were at university, when they figure out that they've only got a 12% chance of getting a job remotely connected to their degree subject, or where 71% of them are going to not get a graduate salary job, it's like, if I'd known all of that before I signed up, I wonder if I would have signed up. But I did sign up. And so we want to get hold of people in Freshers Week and say, do not be one of the ones who walks out of here in 3 years' time with a 2-2 or a 2-1, and you are not going to, you know, you're going to be working on minimum wage for the next 2 or 3 years until you find a graduate level job. Because by the way, the economy for the next 2 or 3 years is going to be really difficult. You know, inflation, and cost of living and redundancies. We're seeing it already in the big tech companies. And, you know, I think, I'm not sure, there's going to be a lot of blood on the carpet over the next few years in the economy. And so I want to wake young people up and say, I'm sorry you weren't told this before, and I'm sorry you've not been given all the information that you really should have been given. I'm really sorry that you haven't been given the statistics which show your chance of justifying this £30,000 loan you're going to take out. But here are the facts. So you choose if you want to be a victim to the system in 3 years' time when you graduate and go, oh, I've got this huge debt, you know, da-da-da-da-da. Or you're going to be one of the 10% who does get a great job in industry. And your degree certificate, by the way, is only half of what you need. So make sure you get the other half as well, which your college is not going to give you. And so if you go to a company that's placed itself in the middle of that economic triangle that can give you that, go find it, go get it. Don't rely on the state system to deliver it. Or the education system, sorry, to deliver it for you, because they're not going to.
So it's interesting that you're talking about, obviously, the changes and everything else and the revolution. It's, I remember our last face-to-face event, Ben stood on the stage talking about revolution, and we've been talking about it for a long time. When our face-to-face event comes back this year, we're looking forward to Ben stood on the stage still talking about revolution and everything else. But like you said, absolutely. It takes time.
Absolutely, we will a revolution.
But I'm interested in regards to all of this different stuff and how that now integrates with potentially a way that you found in through apprenticeships and through that element of education to try and develop students as they go through their learning, obviously alongside the industry at the same time. How does that look? How's that shaping? How's that forming? And what does the work look like to try and prepare students better?
Well, if we go right back to what's the problem we're trying to solve, the problem we're trying to solve is that education is not sending people off to work that are work ready. So there's a skills and talent crisis, and there is a crisis. So that's the problem we're trying to solve. And so there are different markets where we are going to solve that problem. One of them is in apprenticeships, which I can come back to in a second. One is with tertiary education students, which I guess includes apprentices, but it's slightly different because in the apprenticeship scheme, you've got your tutor and there's a 20% off the job training component, which is supposed to cover these skills. And then there's 5.5 million people in this country who are members of 146 Royal Chartered Professional Membership Organizations, or PMOs, who have to do 30 hours a year of CPD, continuing professional development. And we did a massive piece of research on the CPD market, and universally, and I mean universally, like 95% of people said, it's a necessary evil. I have to do it to keep my practice certificate to be a lawyer, an accountant, a chartered surveyor, or whatever it is. I don't learn anything I didn't know already. I didn't learn anything I couldn't have Googled at my desk. I left it to the last minute. I had to put myself on an expensive course for a week just to get my CPD. So there was the cost of the course plus the opportunity cost of being away from the office and the team and the customers for a week. And, you know, that's terrible. Well, you ask them, what non-technical skill stuff can you do for CPD? Nothing. What's the big thing over the next 5 years that you're working on to achieve? Oh, well, I want to be a partner at my firm. Oh, what do the partnership selection committee look for? Well, it's not technical stuff. What do they look for? Well, they look for character qualities and soft skills. Why can't you do that for your CPD? Well, no one's ever provided it. Well, they have now, because that's one of the channels that And then finally, and actually our biggest market is enterprise customers who've got this problem. All these people have turned up after school or college or an apprenticeship scheme, and they don't have the work-ready skills. So we're actually working with enterprise customers for them to be able to offer this to their employees. But of course, also their employees are also in the professional membership organisations having to do the CPD. They're recruiting graduates from universities and colleges, and they all have an apprenticeship division. So there's a sort of red thread amongst all four markets that we've gone after, of which apprenticeships is a subset and a part. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And obviously I said right at the top of the episode about my passion around apprenticeships and seeing that as a valid route. Considering I'd gone down a traditional, I say traditional, the route that most people do, which is A-levels, university job, A-levels, university job. That's the only route to go unless you were going into a trade or whatever else. And we know that that has just been blown up by the rise of job-ready apprenticeships. Interestingly, from what you were talking about there, I've worked with a number of colleges recently who were talking about this by industry, with industry, for industry, so that the skills that are being created and the curriculum that's being delivered is being delivered by industry experts. So it's not just teachers who have gone to university and read a textbook around it. It's with industry, so it's partnership. So actually you're in industry at the same time as doing this learning, and then for industry, because actually the young people have got to be ready for workspaces. Now we know that education, its only purpose is not just to get people ready for work, and that's really important. We get that, but actually this by Wi-Fi stuff, this in partnership with industry, is super super important. And but it's few and far between, because ultimately I'm partnering on some apprenticeship work in the digital marketing space. I've used this analogy offline before, which has been basically that my digital marketing qualification that I've supported people through was written in 2016. It was reviewed in 2019 and is up for review again in 2023. But in 2016 and 2019, TikTok was not a thing really in mainstream UK. Snapchat didn't exist in 2016. So like the whole craziness around the two of the biggest platforms for social media and digital marketing didn't even exist when the specification was written. And so it's out of date. And so it's this, you've talked about young people growing agility. I think the issue in the revolution he's tied into this idea that we have archaic systems that take forever to change, and therefore because it has to go through so many approval processes, and we have to get exam boards and all these people that are very very profitable places, and universities that are very very profitable places. We've got a system that is absolutely broken.
No, it's not broken at all. It's set up perfectly for the training programs.
Yeah, but it is. And Sugata Mitra came onto the podcast recently. It said exactly the same thing. It's engineered to do exactly what it's done, but it's broken in terms of preparing young people for what they actually need, is what I mean.
It's a perfect example of agency capture, where the providers of the service have captured the whole system and written a specification that works for them. But having said that, I think that, it is a completely broken business model. I mean, I can't remember off the top of my head, but, 50% of apprentices drop out, before the end of the course, which is just awful, absolutely awful. Well, I know the profit margins, for a training provider don't stack up if 50% of the people drop off. The percentage of the total fee for an apprenticeship that the endpoint assessor charges versus the value that they deliver is hideous. I'm not sure how they've ever been allowed to get away with it. And, we have built a solution that delivers on the 20%, component of an apprenticeship, because we're not focused on the technical skills. And And essentially, a lot of the pushback from training providers over the last few years has been, we can get away with doing what we're already doing. We don't need to replace what we're doing with this, even though this is cheaper. We rewrote all of the 569 apprenticeship standards for IFATE and did a proper job of standardization and differentiation for all of the character qualities that are specified, because what they wrote was appalling. And today, you know, we've got a fantastic product for apprentices. And the sad thing is, the only training providers who are coming to us and asking to work with us are those who are very worried about failing an Ofsted, because they know they're not delivering on the character component of an apprenticeship, which Ofsted have now mandated will be reviewed. And so if Ofsted have really got the balls and some teeth to really do what they have said will be checked, then I think a lot of training providers will end up being in trouble. And you can't teach non-technical human skills with the same pedagogy that you teach technical skills, and you can't assess them either. But I mean, I've heard so many stories over the last year or so from training providers. I mean, my favorite one was a few weeks ago, where a member of staff at a training provider was telling us about two young learners who never turned up to their class on time, never turned up some weeks at all. And getting towards the end of the year, one of the things that she was supposed to sign off on was that they were accountable. It was one of the, you know, the character qualities in the standards. And so she sat them down one day and said, look, next Thursday is the last day I've got to be able to assess you as being accountable. And so here's the deal. You need to be in your chair on Thursday at 9 o'clock. And that's the only way I can sign off that you're accountable. Got it? Capiche? Yes, yes, yes. She phoned them both the night before. She sent them a text message in the morning to remind them. And they were both sat at their desk at 9 o'clock, which he was rather relieved about. And at 20 past nine, they said, excuse me, miss, do you mind if we go now? We've been assessed as being accountable. And she let them go and she signed off that they had demonstrated accountability during their apprenticeship. Well, the employer that ends up getting them in a few months' time is going to say, what the hell is going on here? Because they've been signed off as having all sorts of human skills, which they don't have at all. So your point is that what is being taught, if you like, technologically and technically is already out of date. And I'm saying that they're missing the 20% off the job training completely by doing it the way they're doing it. And so I love the whole concept of apprenticeships. I happen to live not far down the road from Dalesford estate, which is Lord Bamford of JCB. And he tells a story. I've never had the privilege of meeting him in person, but I've read the story and heard him talk about this, how his dad, Joe Bamford, sent him off on an apprenticeship scheme for 2 or 3 years at Massey Ferguson in France. And that was where he woke up to apprenticeships. And so he has very kindly introduced me to the head of their apprenticeships team and da, da, da. But Bamford JCB is one of the unspoken entrepreneurial heroes of Britain. It's one of my favorites. If you actually look at how big that company was when he took it over and how big it is today with its multi billions of turnover and countries around the world, it's such as, and he attributes all of his success to that apprenticeship scheme as the foundations. I think apprenticeship schemes in theory are amazing and we should do many, many more of them. But if we allow the system to design how they're done, that it serves only the training providers, we're failing yet again hundreds of thousands of young people with a proper education. The system needs to be fixed. So we go right back. What's the problem we're trying to solve? We're trying to produce work-ready people for employers out of the education system, which is technical training and non-technical training, and both need looking at urgently. But and sadly, I don't think the institutions, they're dinosaurs. And we need to create other ways in which we can supplement the non-technical training that for people of college and university to get be successful in the workplace. And I think with apprenticeships, quite frankly, there's an element of the whole thing needs blowing up and starting again, because the system that has captured apprenticeships, I really, you know, that's, I'm not saying it's universally applicable. I mean, I'm sure there's some amazing apprenticeship training providers and amazing apprentices and some employers that are extremely happy with it. But I wouldn't mind betting my bottom dollar that that's a quarter at the most of the total system. So a huge percentage of that cohort are being failed, and we need to urgently jump on that and do something about it. And let's face it, that, you know, whatever your political views, it doesn't really matter. We've got a lame duck government who aren't going to make any changes in the next 2 years.
Yep. And we often go there as well. So, yeah, I love it. And I think you're right on the apprenticeship debacle, really, even though it's the right way, and the apprenticeship levy was a fantastic incentive to get people in, and all the stuff that goes with it, we're still trying to do it in the same way that we've always done education. And it's interesting that we need to do something different. Like I know that,
it's an example, we are fully accredited by the CPD Standards Office, the Learning Performance Institute, NCFE, and a couple of others. Why can't SMEs buy our product for £100 plus VAT per person and claim it from the levy? It's scandalous that it all has to be wrapped up in some apprenticeship training scheme provider who's IFATE or all those other four-letter acronyms that they have. It's like there is a product, there is a solution, and there's enterprise buyers who employ young people who want to need it. Why can't they access the apprenticeship levy for training the future workforce? We can't do any of the stuff that any of the last Boris Johnson and all of his funding for, you know, lifelong learning. Our course can only be bought by a company from an accredited training provider. And guess what? They're all academic institutions. So we can't offer our solution, which solves a real problem, because we're not part of the educational mafia who've tied the whole system up.
So as you, we're with you, we're banging that same drum and with you on that. It's bang on. I think as we kind of think about coming to a close, I wonder if it's you've having done some research on you and the work you've done, and obviously the work that you're trying to do with the academy. It'd be remiss of us to ask somebody who's mentored some and looked after some of the and helped hundreds of CEOs probably over the years. Like if you could leave our listeners with some like key takeaways in terms of like leadership or character or something that you've picked up along the way that would be a nice kind of tidbit to finish with.
I'm often asked in interviews and things like that, of our 54 character qualities, if I could choose one or two or three that I thought were the most important, which would I choose? And I have three favourites, which I always answer with. And everyone goes, seriously? Not this one, this one, this one? I go, no. And to me, The most important ones are being curious, being kind, and being humorous. And I think that, in the words of Groucho Marx, if there are two things you need to be successful, being authentic and sincere, and you can fake those two, you've got it made.
Love it. Love it.
You know, we have skills, you know, like analytical and wise and strategic, but I think actually at the end of the day, if you are constantly curious, how can I make this better? How can I improve this? What's really going on? And you are kind to everybody that you come into contact with, whether it's your boss or your subordinates or your children or your spouse or whatever, and you have a smile on your face and you always try and be humorous and see the funny side of things, then they would be my three character qualities to choose.
Thank you, David. Thank you. I think it's been one of those topics where I think there's a lot of questions and a lot of sense spoken here that lands beyond just the knowledge curriculum. And I know that you'll jump in as well, Steve. Like, we've got to do something better, haven't we?
Yeah, I think, and you'll hear my son screaming, hence why I've not muted as much as I should do. But yeah, he just doesn't want to go to bed, it sounds like. Yeah, I love the phrase education mafia, because I think that's the thing, isn't it? You know, they are racketeering and they are doing certain stuff to because they don't want the system to change. This is there's such challenging thing, many, many different things that are wrong, not just with education, but many things that the people in power and the people that do have the control see the fact that they should change, and they know the steps forward and they know what the art of possible is. But they just, whether they've can't move past it, whether they're comfortable, for whatever reason, it's not the right reason. And I just think that until something happens and forces it, I think we will always have the education mafia lining pockets and being happy to do so, which is such a sad thing. But yeah, it's been really enlightening. I've been quickly writing so many different things down, and I think we could have gone into so many different things. I think it's a career that's worth talking about, David. I think the what you're doing and what you're trying to focus on, as you say, as you come to, which sadly towards the twilight of your career, if that's what you want to call it, but I think it's a noble cause. And
I've got plenty of years left in me. But
Are you sure? I'm all joking. But I think it's a noble cause. I think it's brilliant. And I think
this is what I'm going to devote the rest of my life to. And this will be my legacy project. And so I'm full of energy and I'm really excited about it. I've very recently been invited, which I've been privileged to be invited to join the advisory board of a new APPG on the future of employability. So I hope to, you know, get involved and stir things up there. But, you know, if any of your listeners ever want to reach out, you can get me on LinkedIn, David C.M. Carter. And you can follow IntelliKey Academy also on LinkedIn. So be in touch and join the revolution.
Absolutely wonderful. Yeah, and for those listeners, don't forget to sign up. Come to the Uprising event. Dan, what's the link, please?
I knew I'd
catch him out. He can't even find his mute button. I don't know what's going on.
I found it. Uprising.edufuturist.com, 4th of May, Leeds, UK. If you're around, come and join us. We're pulling together quite a list of speakers and panelists. I was just about to name them there, but we should probably hold off on that a few more weeks just till they're absolutely confirmed. But yeah. It's going to be a great lineup. We called it Uprising because, kind of building on the themes that we've talked about in this episode, that we believe there is an uprising needed in education. So we're bringing together innovators from around the country and around the world, as you'll find out when we announce our list of speakers, to come together to celebrate those who are making the future of education happen. and to figure out our next steps. What's next in this revolution of encapsulating kind of what we've talked about tonight and what we always talk about. So it'd be great to see people in person. It's been a few years since we've had an in-person event. So we're in Leeds, UK, 4th of May. Uprising.edufuturist.com.
So wonderful. Been a pleasure, David. And yeah, cheers, guys. Another great episode.
Thank you very much.